Recorded live at Nightmare Studios in Houston, Texas, you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show, where two jamokes drink and rate craft beer while they chew the fat about the world of hard rock and heavy metal, followed up by one-on-one interviews with veterans and newcomers in the industry. I'm your official announcer, Joey Clams, and here to introduce themselves is tonight's special guest.
This is Steve Kaczynski from Steel Prophet, and I give you the right to rock.
Without further ado, here are two co-hosts who are so metal, their doctors are licensed mechanics. It's Genghis and Ragman.
Hi, this is Steve Kaczynski from Steel Prophet, and you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up!
Ragman, Mono E Mono, with a band he's followed for a very, very, very long time. It's a shame we hadn't had this guy on sooner. We're talking about Steel Prophet, and we're talking about guitarist Steve Kaczynski. Steve, welcome to the Right to Rock.
Hey, thank you, Ragman. It's a pleasure to be here.
Man, I gotta say, man, I've been a fan for a long time. You guys were doing metal when metal wasn't very popular over here in the 90s, mid-90s. And actually, a friend of mine from Dallas, we were still doing tape trading stuff a little bit. You know, we would record cassettes and stuff. That's way outdated now. But yeah. He sent me some of y'all's stuff, and then I went back and started buying the catalog. So, you know, it's awesome you guys are still doing it today. I actually did a little research, and you guys actually started back in the 80s. But I guess you didn't really get signed and get the whole thing to really going until, like, you know, early mid-90s, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we put out a demo tape like in either 89 or 1990, and we're just selling the cassettes. That was back then. So we were selling cassettes to these distributors over in like Germany and Holland and stuff like that. And finally, I got this. I think it was an email or maybe it was a letter back then. And some guy said, "Hey, I got your new CD, and I love it." And I was like, "We don't have a CD." And it turned out that somebody bootlegged our demo tape. Oh, wow. And then after that happened, some of these labels started thinking, ooh, you know, if these guys could, you know, make a CD out of a bootlegged demo, maybe we should sign them for a deal. And that's what happened. So it took like 92, we signed a deal, but this one label never came up with the budget money for the recording. So we did a pre-production demo, and then finally, this other label, they heard the pre-production demo and they just wanted to press that, and that was our first album.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. And what an interesting time for you guys. I mean, it's amazing you're around today still, right? But yeah, for that era, that, you know, early, mid-90s, trying to get a metal band trying to get signed, I think it's awesome that you tapped into the European market where metal was still fairly thriving, because, dude, that's the only way I could get music was, like, buying through import record stores. I mean, that's when the internet was just kind of really getting going and stuff like that, so it was a phone call or mail order catalogs and stuff like that to get any kind of heavy metal.
Yeah, yeah, I remember, yeah, it's like, you know, like, Century Media had their catalog, and, geez, I'm trying to remember this guy, Dennis Gulby. He had his Sentinel Steel, I think is what he called it. And he had his mail order catalog. And it was like, really, you had to, that was like the only thing. Or Hellion Records over in Germany. Those were the only ways to get like some of this underground stuff.
Oh, yeah. And I remember, I mean, I would say maybe it was latter part of the 90s. You were starting to see more Nuclear Blast stuff like show up in like Blockbuster Music. Or some of the record stores like Center, you'd get some of their stuff, and then, you know, I started getting into In Flames and those sorts of bands. But that's awesome that, I mean, that was kind of, I mean, was it a thought that, okay, we can't get signed here, so let's just reach out to Europe, or did y'all kind of have that plan from the beginning?
You know, I think it was kind of like a lucky accident. We just happened to be playing around, you know, Hollywood and Los Angeles, because that's where we're from. And some guy, his name was Chris Leibengut, and he was a Swiss guy, and he was a correspondent for a bunch of the German magazines. And he was like, "Hey, I think I could set you up with some tape distributors that would love your music, you know. They do like Psychotic Waltz and I don't know, I can't even remember what the stuff was back then, but you know." So we said, "Oh, okay." And so, you know, we'd give him like 50 tapes, and he would just sell them to the distributor, and, you know, we just kept on selling these tapes, and that's kind of how it got started. So it was really lucky that this guy just happened to be a guy that would like show up to our gigs, and we got to know him, and that's really how we got into the European market. It was just a fluke, kind of.
Well, let me ask you this, and we're going to jump into the new record here pretty quick, but just out of curiosity, you know, in the 2000s, late 90s, I mean, did you just pretty much concentrate on... And was there a budget for you guys to go over to Europe to tour? I guess being on Nuclear Blast, that might have helped. I'm not sure how much money they gave you to go over there. But that was kind of your audience. Was there much of an American audience at that point to where you could, you know, I'm sure you could play hometown shows, but was there much of an avenue to, like, tour in the States at that point?
Yeah, so really what happened is, you know, we signed up with Nuclear Blast. We did 5 records with them, and they were like heavily into it for the first couple albums. They you know, they saw, you know, we're selling like, you know, 20,000, 25,000 copies, which was a lot back then. Not really a super lot, but it was good. And so, you know, they brought us over there. We toured with Ed Guy and Gamma Ray and Angel Dust and some other bands. And that was fine. And then we finally did a U.S. tour. We toured with Hellstar and, Joe Stump. And I don't know. There was a few other bands we toured with. And but certainly in Europe, we're playing, you know, 500, 1,000 seats. And then when we did the U.S. thing, it's like we're lucky if it's 100 to 300 people are showing up, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty. And in Europe, you know, we're in a tour bus. And in the U.S., we're in a van and we're driving.
Oh, man. What a difference, right? Yeah, I'm from Houston, so I grew up seeing Hellstar.
We played with Houston with Hellstar on this tour. It was like 2001 when we did the Book of the Dead album. We were out there, I remember.
Oh, nice, man. Nice. Yeah. Joe, we've actually talked to James a few times. He's I actually knew him when I was a high school kid, just wanting to be in a metal band myself. So he was always really cool back then. Still is.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. We actually stayed at his house when we were in Houston, so that was pretty cool.
Oh, that's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, huh?
Well, that's so funny, the culture shock of the tour bus in one area, and then you're in the van, like, hoping the AC doesn't go out, especially if you're in Texas in the middle of the summer, which that would suck ass.
Even in California,
I've been there. I've been in LA, man, when it's like 110 out there. I'm like, oh my God, it's killing me over here.
Oh, yeah. When we were there in Houston, it was close to September. And it was brutal, man. It was just like you couldn't go outside. You just had to stay inside with the air conditioning on. And, you know, it was pretty funny, but we even got pulled over, like we were on our way, like through Louisiana or Mississippi, and we were out at this rest stop, and you know, we're just like okay, let's stretch our legs, and you know, I had a football with me, and I'm like, you know, throwing passes to like Vince and Rick and stuff like that, and you know what? Somebody called the cops on us. And they said we were getting a little rowdy at the rest stop.
I can hear there's some long hairs out at the rest stop. You need to come arrest these boys.
Yeah, and that's what happened too. And we had like, you know, so basically, you know, we have a black guy in the band, and we had a Mexican guy on our road crew. And when they saw that, man, they just were like, okay, y'all are gonna have to get out the van. And one by one, they searched us and they went through everything, and it was just like, and they went one by one, so a bunch of us, while we're inside the van and the other guys are out there already, we're just like laughing like crazy and just like joking and saying, uh-oh. It's like, so it was a good experience.
Oh yeah, that's something you can look back at now and laugh your ass off, but
yeah.
That's awesome. Well, before we jump into the new record, I was going to ask you about Rick. I don't know if you want to go into too much detail, but he left the band about 4 years ago, and now you guys have Bard E. Can you explain Rick's leaving, or if you don't want to get into it, I totally understand. And then also, you know, how did you guys hook up with Bard E?
Okay, well, you know, the first question, for as far as Rick goes, it's like it was a very strange situation, because he just announced he was leaving on Facebook and never told anybody in the band, never called anybody, said, hey, you know, it's like I'm thinking of quitting the band, or I've got this problem, can we work this out? It was nothing. It was just like, it was on Facebook. Somebody sends me a message. They're like, hey, sorry to hear Rick left the band. And I'm like, Rick hasn't left the band. And they're like, you sure? And I'm like, yeah. And then they sent me this thing, a copy of his post where he said he's leaving the band. And I tried to call him, and he never called me back. And that was the end of it, man. We just never heard what was the beef, what was really bothering him. He just quit straight up and that was it. We haven't looked back yet, you know?
Well, I got to tell you, man, you found a gem in RD. I'm going to butcher RD's last name, and I'm such a fan of his. Leopakis?
Yeah, that's it. Leopakis. Yep.
Yeah, it's probably easier to just call him RD.
Leah. We just call him the first front part of his last name. Leah is... That's his name to everybody in the band.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I interviewed one of the guys that he's in with Devil's Training in Mystic Prophecy, Lackey. And he just goes by Lackey. I don't know if y'all know Lackey at all, but he's a really good guitar player as well. But, man, I tell you what, RD, what a fine dude. Such a great vocalist. You know, how did he get on your radar? And... is this a thing that is this a one-off for him because he's got other stuff going on, or is he gonna continue with future projects?
Oh yeah, no, he's in the band. It's like it's definitely something that we were very proud of the results of this album, and we want to continue. And you know, it was never like, okay, I'm gonna help you out for one album and see what happens. It was more just like, okay, I'm in. So really how it happened is that we had him mix our last album that Rick was on, Omniscient, and, cause he's a great engineer, he's a producer, he's a great singer, you know, he's a great musician. And, so he mixed that album, and so then we knew him, and, even though we didn't have a singer, I was writing the new songs. And so I sent him a bunch of samples of the new songs, and I said, so what do you think? And he said, yeah, sounds killer. You know, and here's some ideas, I think, like when you get your vocalist, like here's what you want to do with the harmonies. And he said, you know what? I'll sing the harmonies, and if you like them, you can keep them, and if not, you know, just kick them out. And so, you know, after he said that, I said, you know what? We're looking for a singer. Why don't you just sing the lead vocals too? And he thought I was joking, but I was like, nah, I'm not joking. And he's like, oh, I don't know. Let me think about it. And he thought about it, and that's what happened. He just came back and said, you know what? I'm gonna do it. I like it. I like these songs. I think it's gonna sound killer.
That's awesome, man. And he's got such a powerful voice too, man. And you could really feel what he's singing when he's singing. He's one of those rare breed guys that I compare with like a Tom England, maybe a Doug Pinnick from King's X, where they don't sound the same, but they sing with a lot of soul and a lot of feeling. And he's one of those guys, in my opinion.
Yeah. To me, he's just, I can't say enough. It's like, as a matter of fact, I have to keep myself from praising him too much, like in person. Because I don't want it to go to his head, but it's like I'm just like in love with his singing, you know. It's just like perfect, and it's funny to me. The thing, it's like when I said, you know, you sound to me like, and the thing for me was he sounded like the guy from the Robin Trower, James Dewar. If you, any of your listeners would know that, or you would know that, but it's like,
oh, yeah.
It's that soulful bluesy, like thick, rich, like almost oily sound, where it's just like a perfectly worn in like leather jacket or something, you know?
Yeah, dude, I like that. I never even put those two together, but now that you say it, I totally hear it, man. I'm a big Robin Trower fan.
Oh, so awesome. Me too. Yeah. So that's what it was like for me. And, you know, some people compare him to like David Coverdale or, you know, that kind of thing. But to me, it was more like the James Dewar, Robin Trower type thing that really just blew me away, you know?
Yeah, I get that, and it's funny because have you heard the Devil's Train stuff he's done?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
And there's these parts in Devil's Train, he doesn't really do as much in Mystic Prophecy, but you can hear him taking a breath. And my daughter's like, she's a singer, she likes to sing and stuff, and she's like 15. I said, dude, just listen, man. He's taking a breath there. That's so cool. You hear him. They don't edit that out. And he's just giving it, man. And I said, he's giving his heart and soul when he's singing, and it comes off in every project he does. And I got to say, with this new God Machine record, it comes off in there as well. I mean, yeah. We got the Leah fan club right now, but yeah. I mean, yeah. There's a reason. The guy really adds a really cool element to your band, for sure, man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it's just like... it's like I wrote some lyrics and I wrote some melody lines and he checked them out. And then, you know, he's like, okay, here's what I got. And he sent it to me and I was just like, oh my God, it's like my melody lines were just crap, you know, compared to, and then he comes with this thing and it's just like, I was like blown away. I was like, Jesus Christ, man. I knew you were going to sound great with the band, but I didn't really think you were going to sound this good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what? How would you describe the last record, Nissan? I'm gonna butcher the shit out of that too. Yeah. I'm having a hard time talking tonight. is it Omniscient?
Omniscient.
Omniscient. Okay, thank you. We're getting English tonight, people. What would you say the main difference between that album and the God Machine would be?
Well,
than vocals, as far as the music itself.
Yeah, the music is, it's like the Omniscient was very, just kind of like straight up like weird, you know, like just things that I was thinking of doing that I thought were like kind of weird experiments, and it was very progressive there was a ton of layers on the guitars. There was just like, you know, like probably like 16 tracks of guitars on most of these songs and tons of keyboards and stuff like that. And it was very, very odd, weird sounding album, which, you know, it's like, that's, you know, I just kind of make the albums I want to make. And that's what that was. And then this one, it's like, I kind of had this feeling like after listening to like a lot of like these new wave of traditional heavy metal bands, and just like it, when I listened to some of these bands like say Night Demon, I started thinking about how I felt when I first heard like Iron Maiden or Tigers of Pantang or you know, like Def Leppard's first album or any of this stuff. And it just had this freshness, and there was a simplicity to it that just made it really captivating. And that's what I wanted to go for on this album. I kind of just wanted it to invoke these feelings of that time where heavy metal wasn't quite heavy metal yet. It was somewhere between hard rock and heavy metal, and it was just kind of being born and, you know, like originated and that kind of thing. And so that's kind of what I was going for with this, so it's quite a different album than the previous album was.
That's pretty cool, and you guys have kind of morphed over the years, being a little more progressive, maybe a little Fate's Warning in the beginning, and I always thought, you know, kind of an Iron Maiden type band, and then you mixed it up over the years, but this new record's kind of got a mix of, I would say, some of your earlier heavier stuff, as well as some more, like that kind of that hybrid of hard rock morphing into metal type thing. There's some couple songs on the new record that I'm going to bring up that really kind of have that. I guess I'll bring up the first one I'm thinking of, and it's not in order by any means, but it's actually the last song on the record. Life Equals Love equals God Machine. That song, I was like, man, that's really melodic. I really dig this. It's a little bit different. I dig this.
The pull of love's a God Machine.
I'm glad you like that. That's one of my favorites for sure. It's just got like a bit of it, like Riot and Tigers and Def Leppard and Scorpions and just that, you know, that really, you know, melodic stuff that just kind of like catches you and just makes you kind of want to get up and kind of move, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. And I think that's a song that would really do well live. I think it's just one of those really cool, like, anthem-like songs that people are really going to get into.
Awesome. Thanks.
Let me ask you this, the God Machine. So is this a concept record? It seems like there's a thread, but is it a full-out concept record?
No, not really. It's kind of a loose concept where it's like I was thinking about what the title of the album should be, and I just, this God Machine just popped into my head, and I just went around asking all my friends and stuff. I was like, hey, so, you know, when I say the God Machine, what do you think of? And so everybody would say something, and everybody would say something slightly different or really different, and I was like, that's pretty cool. That everybody, they don't even have to really think about it. It's something just pops into their mind immediately. So a lot of the songs are just kind of like different variations on like what people said they thought it was about, or, you know, the three or four ideas that I had about what it meant to me. And that's kind of the concept. It's not really like a story or anything like that, but it's a thread that runs its way through the album.
Sweet. Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking too. Speaking of singles, I guess The God Machine was one of the first videos, and then you have Thrash Relentlessly, which is a badass tune. I'd like you to talk a little bit about Thrash Relentlessly, because that's such a great song. You guys picked to say, okay, I want to do this, or was it the record company? And when you shot these, do you try to do them back to back? Do you get them out pretty quick, or is it something you said, okay, 2 or 3 months ago we're gonna do one, and another 3 or 4 months we're gonna do another one, or how did it kind of work?
Yeah. Well, so the songs were picked. You know, we had a few candidates for which ones we wanted to pick. And I think there was about 3 or 4 that were in the running, but the songs weren't mixed yet, so we had to decide what was gonna be the video before they were actually mixed, which makes it tough because the mix has a lot to do with how good the song sounds in the end. But we guessed, and you know, we were thinking of these, like, I think the other ones were possibly Soul Hunter or, Crucify became a lyric video. And then, the Life Equals Love Equals God Machine was kind of like possibly in the running. And then we kind of had it narrowed down, and then we asked the record company what they thought. And then we kind of came to a decision to use the God Machine and and Thrash Relentlessly as the singles. And then we did them in the same session, and we did that like months before the album came out, and actually before it was completely mixed.
That's cool. And I figured that was, I was thinking that when I watched both videos, so I was like, I wonder if they did this, you know, like 2 days in a row or whatever, whatever it takes to do it. And then yeah. Green screen. It's so easy and a lot cheaper to do a video today than it was back in the day. So you would think it'd be more economical if you could book time to get it done.
Yeah.
Knocked out in a day or two if you can make it happen.
Yeah, that's what we did. You know, we just changed our shirts.
Yeah. There you go. Well, another song I want to bring up, and to me, this could be your next single. It's just, I'm recommending it, is Damnation Calling. What a killer track, dude. Do you have a cool story of how that song came together?
Just, man, that was, you know, like a Steel Prophet album always has like a variety. It's like, it's not like, like an AC/DC album where you kind of like do the same song like 10 times, you know, it's a great rock song and you just like keep doing variations of it. For us, it's always like, hey, this one might sound like Sabbath-y, or this one might sound more like, you know, like Fate's Warning, or this one might sound, you know, whatever. They all have kind of like different feels and different styles, even though it all like kind of comes together as a Steel Prophet song. And this one, it's just kind of like the Doom track, you know? It's like Candlemass or Solitude Eternus or Black Sabbath, you know? It's just like the doomy, slow grind song, and the lyrics have to do with just like the kind of the loss of hope, you know, like where you just get to some point where you stop believing in like your faith or something like that. You start thinking like, maybe everything that you've been taught isn't really like it was taught to you, and that's kind of what it's about. It's you know, just Damnation Calling.
Well, it's a killer track, man. It really is. I got to say, and I think you hit the nail on the head. There's a lot of variety. I mean, you could go to Damnation Calling. Soul Hunter's a kind of an upbeat track, and then you got Buried and Broken, that I guess kind of a pseudo ballad type thing.
Yep.
And then you have Fight Kill. For some reason, it reminded me of Manowar. I think just by the chorus. Fight
yeah.
Kill. I was thinking Manowar today on that. So there's really a nice variety. The record really flows well, man.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's what, you know, we really wanted to keep it flowing well. We wanted to keep it short and sweet. You know, most of the tracks are like, you know, 4 minutes or under. And, you know, it's kind of like the old Van Halen albums. It's like, just fucking give it to me. Give it to me quick. Make sure every track is great. And then, like, end it before I get bored.
You know? There you go, dude. For sure, man. For sure. Yeah, actually, I had it on the iPod all day. I was like, yeah, Life Equals Love would come on, then the God Machine is like, it's over?
Yeah.
And even though I've heard the record, you know, several times in its entirety, you can kind of keep it. It's one of those records that keeps you wanting more, which I think is a good thing for at least a fan, where you're like, oh, God, there's another track. When's this thing going to fucking end?
Yeah,
this is not one of those records.
Thank you. I'm glad it played like that for you, because, yeah, I really, there's some albums, it's just like, you know, when they went to the CD format and you could fit more music on them, I feel like a lot of people just, like, overstuffed their albums. They just, like, we don't need an hour of music. It's like 30, 40 minutes is probably, you know, all I can really focus on is, and you got to give me some variety, and then it's like, it's going to be a great album. But if you're going to just give me an hour, I don't know if I have that much attention span, you know?
Yeah, and dude, I don't know if it's because we're getting older that it's like that, but dude, I'm with you 100%. There's records I get, some of these artists are put out, oh, here's my new double album. Like, fuck, uh-oh. Dude. there's so much music out there now too, mm-hmm. that it's like, it's almost a chore if it gets too long. And I just turn it off. I was like, fuck, I got to listen to something else, or I'm going to put my iPod on shuffle.
Yeah.
That's what I can catch there.
Yep. I hear you.
But, as far as touring goes, what are y'all's plans for touring? You're going to be able to make some festivals over in Europe, or, you plan on doing very many U.S. states this year?
You know, we're kind of just letting the album get out there, and we're looking at the success of that and see how well the sales are doing. And then we're going to try to at least do some kind of one-off appearances here in the U.S., and maybe do like 10, 15 shows with like a headliner out in Europe. That's kind of what we're talking about. But, you know, we're still, the album just came out. We want to see how well it's selling and if it makes sense to actually go out and try to support it, you know?
Yeah, I get it, man. And, you know, logistics and the financial impact it is to tour these days. You got to make sure everything kind of lines up for sure, man.
Yeah, you don't want to go out there and, like, play to 10 people, like, for, you know, like, 10 shows. It's like everybody will be disappointed. The fans, the record company, you know, it's like, it wouldn't be good.
Oh, yeah, I agree, man. And I go to a lot of shows, so it's like if you can hook up with the right headliner, you're pretty golden. And I gotta tell you, man, some of the heavier shows I've been to as of late, one of the last ones I'm thinking of is Children of Bodom. They were with Wolfheart, Swallow the Sun, and I'm like, the crowd, there's this huge crowd. I'm like, wow, you would think this wouldn't be that popular, but this place is kind of packed. And then you'll see some other bands that you think, wow, the place is going to be packed, and there's 100 people, like you said. There's like, wow, this logic's just not making sense of what people are doing. But, I mean, I'm glad to see people are supporting music, because I love seeing live shows, but it's kind of confusing. You can't really gauge what you're going to see from show to show.
Yeah, no, it's like you said, it's like sometimes, like, I go to something and, like, I'm not expecting that much of a turnout, and there's a huge amount of people there, and sometimes it's just like what you said, like, you you see some band like that you think has like a name and status, and it's just like it's a small crowd.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, before we let you go tonight, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
Yeah, I'd just like to say, you know, thanks for all the support, and you know, especially the people out in Houston. We've been out there before, and we loved it. And the fans out there, I gotta say, are really some kick-ass maniacs. It's like, you know, it's like Texas has some really good metal fans. I'll say that for sure, man. And so yeah, just thank you very much for the support. We're very humbled by people that have been checking us out all these years, and we hope to make some new fans too.
Awesome. Well, Steve, we want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on therighttorock.com. And we want to tell the fans to grab Steel Prophet's brand new record, The God Machine, out now on Rock of Angels Records. Steve, man, it's been awesome talking to you, brother.
You too, Ragman.
Dude, you're welcome back anytime, and we hope to catch you if you guys make it down south, man.
I hope we do.
Ragman, and you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
Also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X. Adam and Joseph have lent us 13 to finish the show, so what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up.